This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Andres, as a member of the board of Pantau, which is, I understand, a magazine that looks at the Indonesian media landscape and it looks at journalistic culture and such, they've been doing a survey. Tell us a little bit about that survey. What is it telling us about the people who work within the media system in Indonesia?
This is a 5-yearly survey. We want to know the trend among Indonesian journalists. So the survey in general, it was done, you know, random sampling all over Indonesia, although two places were quite difficult to access, Papua and the Moluccas Islands. So, but this survey is, of course, quite representative of Indonesia. What troubled us is that over the last 5 years, over the last 10 years, we learned that there are more and more Indonesian journalists who believe in what they call Islamic Sharia. Let me give you some figure. Over the last 10 years, there are more journalists who believe that Ahmadiyah Muslim should be banned from Indonesia, rising from 59% to 64% 5 years ago. And then more or less 63% is against pornography, and they want pornography to be banned on the internet, especially on the internet in Indonesia. 63% support the ultra-conservative Indonesian Ulama Council. And then from 39% up to 45% agree that Muslim women should wear the hijab. But of course, there is a range of to what extent the hijab should cover on the neck, on the chest, or on the hip. And then the support for the Sharia, including flogging, increased from 37% up to 45%. So almost 50% of almost half of Indonesian journalists now support the so-called Sharia. And also about 50% support polygamy. They are against the current marriage law, which is restricting polygamy.
Is this a problem? I mean, we say journalists have their own personal beliefs. Those personal beliefs might be, you know, inspired by their religious convictions. Why is this a problem for the profession as such?
Well, there are two arguments. One from Atma Kusuma Astra Atmaja. He is a respected senior journalist, used to win the Magsaysay Award on journalism. He said that journalists in general should lead the society. They are not only represent the society, they should be much more progressive than their society, because they are the ones who are supposed to be, you know, public opinion leaders. The second come from a Muslim scholar. His name is Rumadi Ahmad of the Nadatul Ulama. In seeing this survey, he said that fundamentalism grows in silence. It also grows in silence within journalists. And that is a trend that he is worried about, because Indonesian journalists, like many other professions in the society, police, military, prosecutor, judges, are also growing more and more fundamentalists in Indonesia.
What about the media ownership structures? I mean, if a journalist personal views clashes against the outlook of their media organization. So they're working for maybe a pro-secular, or, you know, you could call it Pancasila type organization, a nationalist, secularist, whatever. Will they be able to kind of infuse their own reporting and their own editorial voice with their personal opinion, or will they be restricted by this? And to what extent is there an Islamic or Islamist press or a fundamentalist press that's accommodating these views?
I often talk to owners, big owners, who own media companies. They basically cannot control their own newsrooms in terms of this fundamentalism. They can control over political issues. They can control over election coverage, for instance. But over this fundamentalism, they are also afraid to reach too much. They might be accused anti-Islam or, you know, that kind of accusation.
In Indonesia, is that accusation something that people fear. You know, one imagines Indonesia as being a much more open and free and tolerant society. It's got a tradition of secularism. You've had an Islamist president who, coming from the Nahdlatul Ulama grouping, which is what 80 million strong, but who believed in the secular political system. I mean, he was was seen as kind of, I don't know if the word liberal or progressive attaches to him, but that was not a man given to kind of a fundamentalist vision of Indonesia. Why has it come to this? I mean, why is it that people today fear questioning, religion and these kinds of conservative values?
Abdurrahman Wahid, the former president, who used to head the largest Muslim organization in Indonesia, once said that he is a small island within the sea of the Nahdlatul Ulama, his Muslim group.
Well, so he himself, wasn't representative of what NU was. Yeah,
he himself said that he is a small island in the sea of Nahdlatul Ulama. The fact that he is smart, he is brainy, he is a very sharp intellectual, it make him as almost a sane figure within the Nahdlatul Ulama. But in terms of practice, he said you need a lot of times, decades, to reach all of the Nahdlatul Ulama members. Now regarding the owners, mm-hmm. Indonesia is also having until 5 years ago, having 15 big media companies, but it is shrinking because of the internet, because of high capital need of media, operating a media company. So it is shrinking. Most of these media companies are not Muslim, most of them. Like MNC, the largest media company in Indonesia, its CEO is Chinese-Indonesian, although the major shareholder is the Suharto family, but still its CEO is Chinese-Indonesian. And also SCTV and many other companies, Compass Gramedia Group is seen as Japanese Catholic control ownership. So they are nervous when dealing with issues relating to political Islam. Meanwhile, there are of course there are big bosses who are Muslim, like Khairul Tanjung, who own the Trans TV Group, or Surya Paloh, who own Metro TV Group. They are Muslim. They are also quite secular. But they are jittery when dealing with, again, political Islam issue. So it is difficult for the owners to exert control over the rise of fundamentalism in their respective newsroom.
If you think of the media as a vehicle for disseminating worldviews, mm-hmm. and you think that basically the big media organizations have been controlled by secularists, non-Muslims, and people perhaps with a liberal and cosmopolitan worldview, why haven't they been able to shape the majority worldview in their own terms? Why is it that this other worldview has come to challenge the liberal, secular, Pancasila-orientated worldview?
Because their goal is not ideological. Their goal is money.
The media organization's goal.
The media owners. Their goal is simply money. They will go wherever the money goes.
So who has been promoting the Pancasila worldview? I mean, we had, 3 decades of New Order government, which was, kind of...
The smaller media companies.
Yeah. Well, what about government? Isn't government promoting a secular, Pancasila-orientated worldview?
It is difficult because, again, the fundamentalism has grown pretty massively. It is not something that you can ignore, nor you can suppress. It is very, very difficult. But again, this is not an Indonesian phenomena only. It is also in Malaysia, I think. It is also growing in the US with, people like Donald Trump. In Europe, people like Wilders, like Nick Farage of the UK, a Brexit campaigner. And of course, it is growing in the Middle East with ISIS as being the extreme one and Saudi Arabia, the old player. So it is growing. Pakistan, India with Hindu nationalism, it is growing globally.
In Indonesia, what is the debate about dealing with this to the extent that you believe it's a problem? What are Indonesian intellectuals and thought leaders saying about this change in orientation, an orientation that might change the very fabric of Indonesian society? Because if you're saying that, you know, 65% of Indonesian journalists want or would be happy to have a nation state based on Sharia law.
No, 45%.
45%. That would still be a significant change in the nature of the republic. The republic was not founded on the basis of Sharia. It would mean a really different Indonesia.
Oh, it is going to be a very different Indonesia if it is to be based on the so-called Sharia. Right now, one-fifth of Indonesia's regencies, all 514 regencies, one-fifth of them have now mandatory hijab regulation. The National Commission on Women's Rights says that there are 521 discriminatory regulations against women and religious minorities all over Indonesia. So it is growing in the sense that Indonesia is more and more discriminating against women. Indonesia is more and more discriminating against religious minorities, whether they are non-Muslim minorities, whether they are, you know, Christian, Hindus, Buddhists, or whether they are Muslim minorities, the Shia, the Ahmadiyya, Nasbandia, Ismailia, and many other Muslim minorities within Indonesia. Gavatar, for instance, 8,000 members expelled from Kalimantan this year. Or whether against native faith believers. Indonesia has at least 250 native believers. This is the pre-Hindu, pre-Buddha, pre-Islam religion like Kejawen in Java or Parmalim among the Batak people. They are now being increasingly discriminated against in Indonesia.
What is the administration of Joko Widodo doing about this discrimination? Is it aware of it? Does it acknowledge it? And is it prepared to deal with it?
They know it very well. Jokowi, the president, he knows it very well. I know for sure he knows it. And I know for sure he understands this is a big problem. PDIP, the ruling party, they also understand very well this is the problem. But of course, their hands are tied because one is economic problem. They need to focus on feeding people, building infrastructure. At the same time, they know they don't want to rock the boat. It might be too shaky for their own government. At the same time, they know that the problem is very chronic. There are legal infrastructure that need to be abolished if you want to do that. There are four state institution that facilitate discrimination in Indonesia. The Ministry of Religious Affairs, the Blasphemy Law Office, which put people in jail based on the so-called blasphemy, and then the Indonesian Ulama Council, which issue conservative after conservative fatwa. And last but not the least is the so-called Religious Harmony Forum. Indonesia has shifted from recognizing the principle of religious freedom, like what the Constitution says back in 1945, to what they call religious harmony, which was passed in 2006 by President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono.
I mean, harmony sounds like a good thing.
Religious harmony sounds like a good thing. It basically says the majority should protect the minorities, and the minorities should respect the majority. But it means that there is no equal rights. The Muslim have more rights than the non-Muslim, the minorities. Because, you know, during Ramadan, restaurants should be closed in a bid to respect the Muslim. Or non-Muslim women should wear the hijab in a bid to respect the majority Muslim. So this religious harmony principle is actually discriminating against minorities. This religious harmony principle is actually giving the Muslim a veto power over the minorities.
What's being done on that that regard? I mean, have minority groups gone to the courts to push back this legislation? Have they, you know, made claims that this these rules might be unconstitutional?
There are three times already challenged against the so-called blasphemy law at the Constitutional Court in Indonesia, but all those challenges were rejected by the Constitutional Court, including by former President Abdurrahman Wahid. He challenged the blasphemy law at the court, but he lost.
What are the courts saying in their judgments against this push back on the blasphemy laws? What is the rationale for maintaining the blasphemy laws in their judgments?
They basically believe that Indonesia still need the blasphemy law, because if the blasphemy law is not maintained, then the Muslim, being the majority in Indonesia, will run amok, will take the law into their own hands. It is better to jail the minorities who accused of blasphemy rather than seeing them being lynched by the Muslim mob. That is basically the basic rationale of the court.
Where does Indonesia go now? I mean, if you're saying that the administration is well aware, but its hands are tied, is the situation going to get any better in the short to medium term? Can we imagine a government or leadership at every level? I mean, Indonesia is vast. I mean, providing the kind of leadership to rebalance Indonesia back to its own sort of Pancasila roots, as it were.
The battle is still going on. It is too early to say where it will end up. But of course, again, I said, the legal infrastructure has already been established. The wall that separates the church, the mosque, and the state is getting lower and lower. Whether the wall can be heightened again, can be built again, it is still a question. Right now, actually, this is the best time to see the debate in Indonesia between the secularists and the Islamists. There are debate after debate every day. I can read it on my cell phone, Twitter, Facebook. Unfortunately, not within the mainstream media. So the debate is still very, very fierce. The latest attempt by the Islamists is to criminalize consensual heterosex as well as consensual homosexual sex. In Indonesia, it is not a crime now to have consensual sex, but they are saying that it is a gap and we need to criminalize those two sexual categories.
Right. So within a marriage, obviously it's consensual. They're saying thus far the laws criminalize adultery for married couples, but non-married couples can have consensual sex.
Yes.
And that's something they want to stop.
They want to stop that.
Now, you know, these seem to be like the ongoing culture wars that you have in many countries, right? Debates about values and how values should be, you know, in the law, in institutions and such. If you want, as Malaysia, where, you know, neighbors, and we live right across the straits from you, what should we be looking at? What kind of stories are coming out of Indonesia today that Malaysians should pay particular interest in if they want to understand where Indonesia is going?
There is a clash of civilization in Indonesia right now, a battle of ideas between Islamism and Pancasila. That is something which is very important, I think, for us to see. Because overall, of all these 10 ASEAN countries, from Malaysia to Indonesia, the Philippines, Laos, Vietnam, Brunei, we are seeing a negative trend. We have a military dictator in Thailand. Of course, we have this financial scandal in Malaysia. The Philippines is now, you know, President Duterte being so rough, kind of giving sanction, tolerance of people killing drugs dealers on the street without any due process. We are seeing a Southeast Asia which is going backward, negative trend. Maybe we still have Aung San Suu Kyi that we hope to make some changes. Indonesia with Jokowi. But, you know, these are only two of 10 countries. Unfortunately, both Indonesia and Myanmar are two of the largest 10 countries in Southeast Asia. And Indonesia is, of course, the largest country in Southeast Asia. If Indonesia goes down, I'm afraid the whole Southeast Asia is also going to go down.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.